Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about fans that are writers and how to avoid writing fan fiction. This is your host, Ben, with your co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
Oh, there could be so many things to be said about certain comics tonight.
Yes, and also with us is Red Ink.
Dude, have you seen my new fan fiction?
Nothing. Anyways, as always, we're going to start with the solicitations. We have AC Comics Femme Force. Femme Force. Not much you can say about Femme Force. It is pretty much what it sounds like.
I'd say what it sounds like, but then we would lose all our listeners, so... no Gold Digger and Antarctic Press. We got Steampunk Edge of Empire.
Got some Archie 656.
Oh, only 10 more months. It'll all be revealed. Archie's really the spawn of Satan.
Oh my god. Archie is dating a girl in a wheelchair. And the solicitation talks about how it doesn't hold her back, but it adds to her dynamic personality. Gag!
Didn't he do that in the 90s?
I don't know. Every once in a while they ask to do it again, so people just... remember, Archie's multifaceted, blah, 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 blah. Let's get back to the double digest with the bikinis. Anyways, moving on. We got a comic that is all about the writers in DC Comics right now. Dicks, Volume 2. No, not really, but...
That's a lot of dick.
Yes.
Let's see, we got Boom Studios, Adventure Time... See, there's something weird and oddly entertaining about the fact Boom Studios publishes an Adventure Time comic and something written by Clive Barker.
Al Lowe makes children's games as well as Leisure Suit Larry.
Well, there's that. We also got the new issue of Loki Ragnarok and Roll, wherein the Norse god of mischief is cast out of Asgard, lands on Earth, and becomes a huge rock star. Because reasons.
Does he sing God gave rock and roll to you?
No, he doesn't turn into Gene Simmons. In fact, in the first issue, when he lands on Earth, he lands outside a rock and roll / S&M club.
Ah. I'm just saying that he is a god, and he is playing rock and roll.
So he did indeed bring rock and roll to you.
To everyone. Anyways, I never really got into regular show, but that's another story.
Dark Horse.
We got Axe Cop, The American Choppers, but no junior or senior.
Oh, they got The Trade of Clown Fatale and Criminal Macabre, Eyes of Frankenstein, which are both... Well, I've been a long-time Criminal Macabre fan, so... I'm just going to tell it, read it, you'll enjoy it. And Clown Fatale is, it's another one of these, like, Dark Horse has really fallen into this love with the whole idea of Grindhouse comics. I mean, they had the miniseries Grindhouse Doors Open at Midnight Run for a bit, and they're taking a break before they bring that back, and Clown Fatale might as well have just been part of that series. It's basically a bunch of female circus clowns decide they want to get out of the business, and they end up becoming hit women. Because that's what happens.
Yep.
Who comes up with this fucking shit?
I don't know.
Sad people.
It's actually, the story itself, like, it's fairly entertaining if you accept that it's just a Grindhouse movie in comic form. And not all of these Grindhouse ideas have been really bad. I mean, they had the miniseries Kiss Me, Satan, where one of the fallen that rebelled against God with Lucifer is working as Heaven's hitman to earn his way back into God's good graces. And he has to save a coven of witches from the werewolf mafia.
So here's something that would interest you, JT, about one of your favorite characters, Star Wars Darth Maul.
Oh. Does he have the Super Saiyan horns and the robo goat legs in this one?
No, this is pre-goat leg.
Ah, damn it.
Because, you know, once he gets those goat legs, Uncle Ben's, you know, shining his rifle.
There's one of two ways you could take that statement, Ben.
Uncle Owen's just sitting there ready to go. He's like...
Polish of the rack.
So, moving on, we have DC Comics. And then moving on, we have, let's see here. We got some interesting stuff from Dynamite. We got Red Sonja, number 10.
Red Sonja, new Magnus. Actually, that new Red Sonja actually has been a lot of fun to read.
By Gil Simone.
My point is proven. What else we got? Magnus is still out. Lone Ranger. I thought they canceled Lone Ranger.
Not even the movie could do that. Ooh! Fantagraphics Books has a Steve Ditko archive available. Love it.
Let's see. We got IDW. Archie, the Swingin' 60s Daily Newspapers. I didn't even know they had... Well, not all that surprising, really. New Kill Shakespeare. Oh, that was a weird, weird comic to read. Wherein somehow the characters of Shakespeare are sent on a mad quest to kill the bard.
The bard.
The bard.
Let's see here. We got some Image Comics. Invincible number 111.
Second printing.
Yes.
Is that this week?
Well, they came out like the second... This is the second editions of this, yeah. Came out this week. We got Aphrodite 9. Jesus, they brought that back. Ah, yes. Ben's favorite comic, Sex Criminals, number 6.
No, I think you meant Linkara's favorite comic, but moving on.
Let's see. We got Marvel, new Daredevil. Actually, the Mark Waid and Chris Samnee continuing their great run on that.
Yes.
New Iron Man, new Iron Patriot.
So what do you think of the whole Iron Man fighting Dark Elves thing?
Well, that makes about as much sense as the Earth 616 Galactus ending up in the Ultimate Universe.
Ah. But I mean the whole where he wears a suit of pure iron and he's going, are the elves out to play? It's like, I feel like he's a slasher. Like he's a slasher villain going against these elves. It's like, it's almost deliciously funny, but at the same time, it's like, geez, Tony, that's a little extreme.
Well, the fact that he has that suit of armor, well, it's not like he doesn't have 50 bajillion spare armors anyhow. I know, I kind of dig the idea, because I mean, the long and the short of the ongoing story is he's basically tracking down the Mandarin rings. And he's also working with his half-brother, half-adopted brother, Arno, who turns out to be the real legitimate son to Howard and Maria Stark, and Tony's really adopted at this point. And they're going to build a... They had this was actually the name of the storyline a while back, is the Untold Origin of Tony Stark, where Recorder 4, was it 451, who's a character from Marvel lore, had come back years ago, cut this deal with Howard and Maria Stark that they're gonna futz with their son's DNA and make him like this living, you know, super intelligent weapon for this threat that's coming. And by the end of it, it turns out that Tony discovers that he is actually adopted. He is not the blood, flesh and blood son of Howard and Maria Stark. It's really this guy named Arno who, because of what his dad in Recorder 451 did to his DNA, he has to live in an iron lung, basically. And it was kind of a roundabout way. Now they're hunting down the Mandarin rings, and they're building like a master builder ring for Tony to use to control the others, and they're brought back Extremis.
Well, the interesting thing is, when Tony went to the elf world, the dark elf world, he brought out this whole thing about how the elves, you know, go to Earth and steal babies from cribs and stuff like that. And they're trying to, like, psych Tony out. And that's when Tony went all slasher, you know, Freddy Krueger on them.
You could almost hear that ch-ch-ch in that moment. Let's see what else we got. New issue of Nova, Original Sin. Of all the miniseries that are crossover events Marvel's done lately, Original Sin is the one that I actually have enjoyed the most.
Excellent. Well,
yeah, because it's a murder mystery, and it's a superheroic murder mystery. I mean, Wouldn't you like to know who is capable of taking out the Watcher, the guy who sees everything?
Not really. So I think the Watcher sort of fizzled out around the 80s, personally, but that's just me.
The first time where he was pulled from active duty by the Watcher's Council, and yet he still got his job back?
Yeah. So anyways, let's move on. We got... we got some Valiant comics here. Anything interesting you see in Valiant?
No, I've never read Harbinger, and I picked up the first trade of Unity on a 50% off sale, and I was kind of like, meh.
Not impressed?
It's all right. It's just not anything that I'm going to really come back to. I mean, the only comic I really read from Valiant is Archer and Armstrong, so...
Oh, and of course, JT's favorite publisher, Xenoscope Entertainment.
Oh, just for a second, I thought you were going to say Titan Books had that new issue of WWE Superstars out. Pretty to look at. That's all I'm going to say about Xenoscope.
You read them for the articles.
Yes. It's the Playboy defense.
The funny thing is Playboy actually has some pretty good articles. Stephen King actually wrote unreleased horror novels as, like, short stories in Playboy first.
I did not know that.
The more you know.
Pardon me.
So, anyways, that's the look at our solicitations this week. We'll take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll have the topic of the show.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the Internet's number one and longest-running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Adkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right, and we... Hey, again?
Come on. On, Chuck. We're just kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we... Okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the Geekcast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Good.
No.
What about sports?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's all right.
It's action. It's drama. It's comedy. It's Decian, the superhero webcomic. Decian's got superhero antics and sexy girls. Read it now at Decian.com. Dasien.com.
And now, back to the show.
And we're back to talk about fan writers and how to avoid writing fan fiction. Because the thing is this. Everyone is a fan of something. And would you... Let's say, like, I love Superboy, as everyone who listens to this show knows. I love Kal-El, Superboy. And let's say, for some reason, DC Comics goes, hey, Ben Carver, we want you to write Superboy. And they drop it in my lap. As tempting as it would be for me to pretty much retcon everything Geoff Johns has ever done to the character in the first 10 pages.
Just have him wake up from a bad dream.
Yes, and Patrick Dempsey's in the
shower. Duffy comes out of the shower.
Yeah, pardon me. Who's Dempsey?
It's Tanya Moon staring at a snow globe.
It's an autistic child looking at... Yeah. Anyways, as tempting as that would be incredibly disrespectful to all the years of everything else that ever happened around the character. It would be as disrespectful as what Geoff Johns himself did when he got the character. So... Like I said, as tempting as that is, that's wrong. And you have to write with respect to the past writers, the past continuity, the past stories. Because as soon as you go, oh, I'm not going to pay attention to that because this is my special character, I'm a fan, and I want to protect this character's soul or something, it starts going into weird territory. It's you know, let's talk about some examples of this. Red brought up a great example of this, Dan Slott. Red?
Huh?
I said you brought up a great example of this with Dan Slott.
Yeah, but you're talking about the Otto Octavius?
No, I'm talking about the She-Hulk thing.
The She-Hulk thing? I never...
Okay, I'll explain the She-Hulk thing. Because in one guy's run of X-Men, what was his name again? We just talked about him about... What's his name?
Grant Morrison?
No, the sucky Chuck Austin.
That's it. Oh,
She-Hulk. In
this, and once you go Juggernaut, it's physically impossible to go back.
And the thing is this, this was the impetus of Juggernaut turning good and becoming an X-Men himself. So this is a... I'm not joking, Neil.
Once again, Dragon Ball Z, it sounds like Vegeta. Pussy turns him good.
It's a pretty good pussy, but... okay.
I mean, I'm just picturing him in bed with She-Hulk, and like, as he finishes up, he's like, "I'm the Juggernaut, bitch."
Oh God. That is actually horrible.
Yeah, but funny.
And how many students at the Xavier School were scarred after that night of passionate lovemaking?
Oh God. All of them. But. In picture related to topic, but anyways, the point remains is the is, you know, Chuck Austin wrote this. That was his intent, and all the other writers that came after are like, okay, we gotta live with this. And then Dan Slott came along and he had the sensational She-Hulk. I gotta be honest, a lot of what he did in his run was fun. It was amusing. It was cute. It was nice. But there was a point where She-Hulk was like flirting with Wolverine, and Wolverine says, "No thanks, I don't want Juggernaut sloppy seconds." And that's when She-Hulk objected and says, "I never slept with Juggernaut. What are you talking about?" And that's when they revealed in the next issue that there's this interdimensional travel agency where people in a normal, non-superhuman universe get to travel to the Marvel universe, and if their counterpart in the Marvel universe happens to be superpowered, they get the exact same powers and looks as their counterpart when they travel across. And the explanation is a Jen Walters from this alternate dimension did this travel and then slept with Juggernaut, and that's why the real She-Hulk never slept with Juggernaut.
So Dan Slott was trying to preserve his precious waifu?
Well, if you want to go that far, but yes, it's a...
I mean, when you have to go down this whole convoluted alley just to remove one little scene from continuity, that's kind of ridiculous.
And the thing is this, there are worse things these characters go through in their continuities. It's like, sometimes as a writer, that you get onto a book that you have a character you love that's gone through some shit, you gotta go like, okay, I gotta take the hit, you know? Well, obviously nobody in this room has ever been in a situation where they have to pick, well actually technically Neil and I kind of sort of had to pick up on the continuity of other writers, but on a much smaller scale, but you get my point. It's like, you gotta respect, you know, even if you don't agree with it, you gotta respect it somewhat, what came before you.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, it depends. I mean, the whole thing with comic continuity gets kind of ridiculous after a while. I mean, there's like more stories in Marvel's history that could ever possibly happen in one lifetime.
Yes.
But, I mean, at some point, like, especially when you, like, jump to another medium like movies, you know, you don't want to like just pick up off of the comic continuity, you want to make your own. So
yes,
and because like creatively, you know, you don't want to be tied down by all these like other little things that like make it difficult to write anything.
That's true, but let's say Neil,
mm-hmm.
you get to write She-Hulk now.
Yeah.
What would you do? Would you actually look and see how she was handled in like the last run, just so you know where to pick up from? Or what would you do?
I would look back at the last run and build off of that. But the thing is, if I had gotten She-Hulk, if I had picked up off of She-Hulk right after she slept with Juggernaut, I would make it so that you could acknowledge, so that the fans could still acknowledge that happened. But I would just move forward without ever really bringing it up again.
Okay. I mean, JT, you've been kind of silent in this.
I just love listening to you go off about She-Hulk. So.
Okay.
I just, when it comes, like you asked Neil there, when you come, you pick up a title, you do want to have that basis in, you know, what came before, mm-hmm. at least so you can reference it, because you don't have to go right off from where the last She-Hulk title, you know, took off from. It just, like, when it comes, like, you know, fans writing stuff, I mean, there's one miniseries which, you know, speak about in an upcoming episode, was a series that came out from Dynamite called Masks. And it's basically a team created by Chris Robertson and Alex Ross, because Dynamite has all these licenses for, like, Golden Age, like, masked Man of Mystery characters. So they came up with a story that teams up the Shadow, the Green Hornet, and Kato, the Spider, Zorro, the Black Bat. And ostensibly, a story like this is a work of fan fiction, because these guys are fans of that.
Right.
And it's just... what I personally kind of have for you is, at what point does it just become, it's not fan fiction, it's just a work of fiction? Like, it's just a story. Like, where, you know, how do you find that line in your writing, and, you know, how do you decide whether...
You balance the love with the logic.
Exactly. Yeah, like, yeah, but so. And that's kind of why it's hard for some of this stuff, like, something like this, if you read the story, it's, you know, it's solid from start to finish, you know, it hits all the major beats of a crossover without, you know, having there to be like a million exigent comics and one-shots and miniseries that you have to pick up. And there's stuff that's like there's stuff that are like love letters to certain things you love. Like another miniseries I love that it never finished, this one, unfortunately, is a series called Wildsiders, which was basically, it was created by J. Scott Campbell, with I think it was work, art from him, and also work from Andy Hartnell. And it's basically their love letter to John Hughes teenage coming of age drama movies and stuff like Power Rangers. Because it's about this group of diverse teens that get this holographic technology that they can become like part man, part animal, you know, that sort of thing. And oh, you no. see...
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. And I mean, this thing was notable because, I mean... Like J. Scott Campbell and Andy Hartnell, like, they were such loves. Like, you look at some of the characters, they went out of their way to actually pattern them after specific actors. Like, the character Zach, who's, like, the quarterback and the jock on campus, he looks like, was it Jason Marsden, who played Cyclops in the X-Men movies? I forget the name. The guy that's, like, the linebacker who becomes a gorilla, he looks like Jack Black. Styler, who's the kid that he creates this holographic technology with his scientist mentor who looks just like Halle Berry. And he looks like, I can't remember the guy. It's the guy who played Ferris Bueller's sidekick in the movie there.
The Enterprise B captain?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like he looks like that. And then, you know, it's stuff like this, that this could be seen as fan fiction, you know, stuff like that. It's just, but there's all this love. Like, you couldn't help but make certain characters look like the people you had in mind, you know, to balance that out. I mean, the head villain is basically patterned after Gene Simmons, that he's the former bassist for this glammed up costumed rock band who's won't do anything to make a buck, basically.
And that's, I was very like, successful doing it. But the thing is, yeah. This, that's the balance between the love and the obsession. I mean, let me bring up another writer who way past that line, Hudlin. You all know Hudlin,
right? We're
talking
about the Black Panther.
Yeah, the Black Panther bullshit. The Black Panther character is a great character, you know. But the thing is this, it's like Hudlin resents the fact that this very strong African American, well, African character, he's not African American, is. Was created by a Jewish white guy. And he seems to resent it every, you know, all through his pages. And this is how Hudlin writes the character. Because Hudlin has, you know, Hudlin basically wrote Black Panther as if he was a Black Panther. he wrote with an agenda. He wrote having some stupid ass shit like the Black Panther's grandfather beating up Captain America in World War II.
And why wouldn't that happen?
Well, because the thing is this: they were both on the same side in World War II. They were both against the Nazis. Why would they have this grudge match?
Did you
because
read
Wakanda's an isolationist nation and they don't trust outsiders?
Exactly.
Well, there's more to it than that. There's also the fact that in Hudlin's run, you know, Wakanda also has the cure to cancer, but they're not going to give it to the white world because the white man will find a way to turn it into a weapon. It's like, dudes, you have the cure to cancer, and you're just not going to give it because of that, really? I mean, the thing is this: Hudlin is such a caricature of himself that he was actually removed off Boondocks, and they made him a caricature of himself on it, and that's the fucking Boondocks. I mean, this is a guy who is horrible at his agenda, and he doesn't understand how to write to the existing characters. He doesn't understand how to write the existing continuity. He wants to write to this whole Wakanda is this wonder nation that is so much better than the white world. And, you know, there are elements of Wakanda being a great nation in previous writers. You know, but if you want to talk about good Black Panther writers, I want to talk about Priest. I think Priest really was far better than Hudlin.
That's the Marvel Knights series, right?
Yes, because Priest was able to balance it out with the other characters being able to shine just as much. While with Hudlin, it's nowhere near the same thing.
Well, and I don't disagree with what you say about Hudlin. Like, there were elements, at least just that for the first six issues of that Black Panther series that he started, that I enjoyed that, mainly because it had Romita Jr.'s art. But, I mean, there's elements, like, he tried to update the story of T'Challa becoming into his own as, you know, Black Panther. But, I mean, clearly he didn't look at the origin of other characters, like Claw, the Man of Sound, because wasn't his, I can't remember, I haven't read my Fantastic Four in ages, but weren't the Fantastic Four involved in the creation of Claw?
Or I believe they were.
Yeah, see, because that's what always bothered me about Hudlin's writing there, is that he didn't go back and pay attention to what's been written about the characters before, like, you know, origins of certain characters involved. I mean, you had, like, the Catholic version of the Black Knight. You had the new Russian version of the Radioactive Man. You had the cannibal character, which I don't think is... I don't remember ever seeing that character in anything else before. You know, you bring up... I didn't read the last, I think it was about the last half of the Priest run, so I don't remember if Shari, like T'Challa's sister, was part of it. And that was the big thing for me, is that Hudlin goes and tries to, you know, update and revise elements of the origin of the Black Panther, which Marvel has done very well over the years. I mean, at this point, Ben Grimm didn't fight in the Korean War. He's part of, like, Operation Desert Storm. But, again, like you're saying, like, he just doesn't pay attention. You know, those who, what do you call it, those who don't pay attention to history are doomed to repeat it.
Yes.
Not specifically on this point. Hudlin just didn't pay attention at all. Like, he came in with his agenda and what he knew off the top of his head about certain characters, and it didn't all quite stick. I mean, that's a big thing with writers, with any fans. Like, you know, it's great if you're a huge fan and you have this encyclopedic knowledge of certain characters, but you got to at least pay homage to what's come before, you know, even if it wasn't the greatest thing ever. You should at least, you know, look that up. I mean, that's why I like Dan Slott's Spider-Man. You know, what, and he was kind of the main writer, architect, like, never mind One More Day, because we all know that's shite. But from Brand New Day on, from that reboot, you know, where they brought you know, Harry Osborn back at the end of that first issue. And everything forward has been great because Slott and the other writers have looked at what worked in the past and worked with each other to incorporate all this stuff and just kind of build on what came before while developing new things. So you still have Peter Parker working at the Daily Bugle, except now it's a muckraking tabloid and the guy that runs the place actually pays him good money. Whereas before, you know, the Daily Bugle was, you know, this mighty bastion of journalistic integrity, but the guy running the place couldn't be spared to pay people what they're worth.
Like I said, the big thing is, you know, all I look for is a writer that sees the mess, you know, who's willing to inherit the mess. I mean, you know, another good example of this is you know, Gail Simone, when she got Wonder Woman, very briefly. And, you know, she was ecstatic about it because that was like the quintessential, you know, strong feminine character in comic books. And, you know, here comes one of the writers that's known to write towards that strength. And the thing is, this is, she really didn't get a chance to do much of anything on it. And I think part of it was because she paid so much past respect to everything that came before her that, you know, if it wasn't the same as when Perez came onto Wonder Woman and he was given a blank canvas. I mean, really, that's the thing, is when you look at the different writers and what they do. I mean, do we have another example of a writer that, well, Geoff Johns is a great example, and I'm not going to talk about Superboy again. I'm going to talk about Green Lantern.
Oh, really? I thought you were going to bring up Kid Flash.
And the Skittles Lanterns?
The Skittles Lanterns.
Oh, jeez.
The thing that I want to bring up here is Johns is a man with an agenda. Red put it perfectly, is he wants the fucking Super Friends back. So when Johns came on the scene, things have changed. Hal Jordan was not Green Lantern for at least a decade. He was the Spectre now, so technically he was dead. And that's just the reality of the situation. He was that way for at least half a decade. He was familiar to the comic book readers of that way for at least half a decade. That was what he inherited. But he didn't like it. He didn't like the whole parallax thing. He didn't like Hal Jordan going crazy because of the death of Coast City and becoming a supervillain. He didn't like it. You know, lots of people didn't like it when it happened. Every time a new writer came on, there was always that chance that, oh, here's this writer that's coming on. He might reverse it. But no one did until Johns came along. And when Johns reversed it, it's like, this is why you don't want to reverse these things. At least in this hackneyed fashion. Because Geoff Johns made it a point. He made it a point that he had a book that basically said Hal Jordan's character's flaws. That listed everything bad that Hal Jordan ever did. From sleeping with Aresia to the Coast City thing, to Parallax, to driving drunk,
to aborting his own child.
Yes, and it was all in this book. And Geoff Johns, just like Dan Slott, made it a point to address these things, come up with some hackneyed retcon as to why it's actually okay, flying in the face of the original written material. Because Aresia was always a preteen in the comics. They made the point that she was immature. She acted immature. She was young. They made the point to address it tons of times in the comics. And then Geoff Johns wrote, oh, actually 1 year for her species is like 100 years for ours, so actually it's okay. And nowhere in the previous comics did it ever say that. That he came up with that bullshit that he put it in. You know, just like, you know, the goddamn yellow fear monster that was never in the original Parallax concept. You know, it was things like this that they kept, that the Johns kept on doing, because he had this concept that he wanted and he had to get it as quickly as possible without respect to the previous writers and to the previous continuity.
I know that that retcon with Aresia doesn't even work, really, because even if you say that her species matures more rapidly, if she's still kind of acting like a child, it's
no, she didn't. She didn't mature rapidly. That's the thing, is she still had a preteen body. She got a Green Lantern ring and used the ring to age herself up.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, his retcon doesn't really work, even if you assume that, because it's like, she looked like a teen, she still acted like a teen. It still makes Jordan look like a monster for sleeping with her. Because if you knew someone who was an adult who still, you know, kind of had the mind of a child, you would be like, eh, I wouldn't go for that.
And like I said, these are things that, you know, Hal Jordan was a flawed character, but they made the point to where they, where everything that he ever did that was a flaw, you know, just like what Dan Slott did with She-Hulk. Oh, I don't like this thing. I don't like it so much I'm going to make it a painful point that this never happened.
It also kind of shits on any sort of redemption storyline you could have done with Hal Jordan. I mean, making him the Spectre would have been like, you could have done something with that to kind of redeem him, whereas like,
they did
this. Well, yeah, but I didn't read it. So
he tried to turn the Spectre into the Spirit of Redemption instead of the Spirit of Vengeance.
Yeah. So that's actually a better way to redeem the character than it would be to, you know, just try to erase all the bad things he did.
Yeah, and like I said, the way Johns did it is sloppy. I mean, we laugh at the whole Dan Slott interdimensional vacation agency thing, because that's an ass pull of all ass pulls.
That is.
But it still makes an effort to say, okay, this actually did happen, but it didn't happen with the real She-Hulk. So it at least pays attention to, okay, yes, there was a She-Hulk that slept with Juggernaut, but it wasn't the Jen Walters we know. You know, at least there's an attempt to, like, to acknowledge that these events happened. While Geoff Johns goes, oh, no, you weren't paying attention, you know, because Hal Jordan is perfect.
You weren't paying attention.
Yes. And he did similar stuff with Barry Allen once he brought him back, too.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's I've never read it yet, because you can't pay me enough money to buy a Geoff Johns penned book now. But, you know, I heard he did some things with Trial of the Flash that totally ruined it. And Neil, in case you don't know, the last Barry Allen story before Crisis was the Trial of Barry Allen, where Barry Allen the Flash killed Professor Zoom the Reverse Flash and was put on trial.
Oh yeah, I do remember hearing about that.
And see, the thing is that's one of those moments of imperfections in the character of, okay, well, the thing is, Reverse Flash threatened to kill. To kill someone very dear to Barry,
Iris.
Yes, Iris. Yes, and you know, to be fair, you know, the Reverse Flash was someone who kept on coming back from the future. You know, so he made the choice to do that to end the threat, and he was put on trial for it. And you know, in Crisis, you know, Barry Allen, he went out like the big hero. He saved all of existence.
Yeah, you'd think that would be the redemption, which I'm sure it was intended to be. But again, like, some new writer, like, doesn't understand that and comes in and shits all over it.
Yeah, and so for decades, plural, decades, you know, Barry Allen died a hero, and he was now this untouchable monolith, because the only thing that's more pure than a dead hero is, you know, there's nothing more pure than a dead hero, because you know, he died being a hero. He died for the whole of existence, and he, you know, you can't top that. And so all of a sudden Barry was this idol that Wally couldn't live up to. And as one of Red's favorite trades tells the story, you know, the return of Barry Allen, a great trade written by Mark Waid. It tells the story of Barry, you know, of Wally finally coming to peace with that and, you know, living up to his own legacy and no longer being afraid of Hal's, you know, being afraid of Barry's shadow, I should say. And that's where you take these titles. And so when you have Geoff Johns come in and you have his writing team come in and make these decisions, oh yeah, Wally West doesn't exist anymore. Boom, done. Barry Allen's back. Boom, done. Barry Allen's perfect. Boom, done. It's like a big fucking steaming load onto the people who made the attempt to make it work for all those decades. And we're not talking about okay writers doing okay work. We're talking about Mark Waid here. And you have to pay respect to these people because these are the people that for decades, plural decades, kept this thing going for the fans, and you can't do that. And so when you have people like Geoff Johns come in and write their fan fiction, where and Hal Jordan is back and is perfect again, it's like I said, it's a big steaming load on everything that came before. Red, do you have any comments?
You pretty much said everything I had to say.
JT?
I'm not sure how to voice my opinion here that won't cause the vein in your head to explode.
We are allowed to have discourse here, JT. Go for it.
I don't think that... No, don't get me wrong. Like I said, I enjoy a lot of Geoff Johns' work. I don't have the love for, you know, Connor Kent that you do.
Con L. You know, I don't care
Con
for
L.
I don't care for Connor Kent because he's an emo bastard. I care about Con L.
Con L, Connor, same guy.
No, different guy.
Same guy.
Different guy, move on.
Same guy, I'm moving on now. No, it's like there's... I don't think that Johns wrote when he brought Barry back in Rebirth. I don't think he brought him back. It's like, oh, he's perfect. I mean, he's the ideal, sure, that's... But I don't think he writ him as being, like, the be-all, end-all. And there were things that Geoff Johns did with Barry, like, where I think it does undermine the sacrifice that Barry made in Crisis, that he became this, like, almost a recurring character in Johns' run, that he would occasionally show up out of the time stream to help Barry. Because they even mentioned in Crisis that, you know, he spent this time in the future, and then he comes back with a cosmic treadmill to, you know, basically become a MacGuffin that Wally needed to solve whatever in Geoff's run. I do think that bringing him back like that in his Flash writing did cheapen Barry's sacrifice, but I don't think it shat all over everything. I still don't think he should have done it. I mean, because that it was a cheap move to bring back, like, you know, a character like that that went out on a high note, sacrificing himself to save all of reality, and he just, oh wait, I gotta go back like three times before I actually sacrifice myself to help my nephew, because he clearly can't do it on his own. I mean, every writer that, like I said before, every writer that takes on an established character, they can do what they want with the character, but it should be, you know, kind of in reason, you know. Do what you want, but don't forget where you came from.
That's all I'm saying, you know, is you have to look at the past runs, and you can't make a decision of, oh, I don't like any of this that happened. Okay, you know, wake up, you know, Patrick, what's his name, is in the shower now. you don't write that way, because it's cheap, it's soap opera-ish, and it cheapens the experience, because... Because for years, the thing that I enjoyed about DC was, you know, they made it stick. They made it stick. You know, Barry Allen's dead. They made it stick. Hal Jordan's dead. They made it stick. Jason Todd's dead. They made it stick. And then, you know, when these people came in power, what happened to these three characters? Don't stick no more. And it used to mean something. It used to mean something because... You had things like Jason Todd. You know, Jason Todd was supposed to be the edgy Robin. He was the street tough that became Robin. He, you know, and they wrote him a little too street tough, and people didn't like it because he wasn't a nice, pleasant boy like Dick Grayson was. So, you know, they killed him.
Where's my $2, DC?
Yeah, it was a promise. It was a promise. And
well, you can't blame Jason Todd on Jeff Johns.
I'm not blaming him on Jeff Johns. I'm just saying it.
There's another Jeff. You can blow up. Yeah.
Well, the point remains is, well, the two Jeffs
are both. Can you really blame Jeff Loeb? You blame the fans on Jason Todd. Let's be fair.
Okay.
Jason Todd didn't have fans?
When I say fans, I don't mean his fans. I mean the fans that dialed that 1-800 number to kill his monkey ass.
He had it coming.
And like I said, so what's the problem then?
Well, the point is he died. And like I said, is the thing is, what happened was when they wrote him, when they created him, well, the post-crisis version of him, the pre-crisis version of him was an acrobat. He was basically a blonde Dick Grayson in pre-crisis. Post-crisis, he was a street urchin. He was the street tough kid that became Robin.
He was a dick.
And they kept on pushing it, trying to make him seem extreme, and they pushed it too far, and the fans didn't like it. So they killed him, and that's the thing is they tried something different, didn't work, and they had to come up with a solution. And that's just part of what you do with comic books. But the thing is, you have to come up with a natural solution. They could have done so many other things. They could have quote unquote voted Jason off the island, just basically have him go, you know what, this isn't working out, Jason. I'm sending you to an orphanage in England.
Fired.
You know, they could have sent him up the stairs with Richie's older brother and two younger Winslow daughters.
They only had the one younger Winslow daughter, didn't they?
There were two, but it was only one that disappeared.
Well, yeah.
Because the other one was in the quote-unquote romance with Urkel.
Okay. Yeah, and then the younger one went on to do porn.
Oh, God.
What?
That's the rumor. The girl, the younger Winslow daughter.
Not a rumor,
daughter.
It's true.
Oh, really? I just knew it as a rumor.
Yeah.
But like I said, is that's what you do. You write to the situation that's happening. And it's a little soap opera-ish when you sort of write, like, you try to write around it for your own agenda. And I think that's really what I'm trying to, like, stumble into saying here. I mean, it's a... JT, if you could write any book right now, which, what would it be?
Ooh. Huh.
Go Power Rangers.
Oh, shut up, Red. No, it can't be Power Rangers because I've actually written two separate fanfics in Power Rangers.
Oh, God, and no.
Yeah. Why don't you ask Red and Neil and come back to me? Because
Well, actually, like, that brings me to another topic about fanfiction writers writing. Devin Grayson actually started writing comic books. And by the way, her real name isn't Grayson. She changed her name to Grayson because she loves Dick Grayson so much.
Well, isn't that the same thing with Matt Fraction? Isn't actually his name?
Well, Devin Grayson, what happened was she was watching Batman the Animated Series, and she loved it so much that she written fan fiction and sent it to Warner Brothers, says, hey, I have this fan fiction. For some reason, they decided to hire her to write comic books.
Okay.
Huh.
And then she wrote the character Tarantula, her created character Tarantula, raped Dick Grayson on the rooftop.
Is that the rooftop? I thought it was on a fire escape.
It was a rooftop.
All right.
Well, one's not exactly more romantic than the other.
This happened?
Yes.
Wow, where the hell have I been?
Oh, boy.
Basically, what happened just prior to Nightwing 100 in the original volume was Nightwing and Tarantula trying to take down Blockbuster for the final time.
And she shoots him in the head and kills him like
he's like Stone Cold kills him. And Nightwing is so run down and beat up. This is almost his Bane breaking his spine moment.
Actually, the thing is this. If I gotta be fair, Devin Grayson's whole run of Daredevil was like watching someone take Frank Miller's... I mean, of Nightwing is like watching someone take Frank Miller's Daredevil Born Again, rip the serial numbers off, and call it something else. Elektra, Tarantula, Blockbuster, Kingpin.
Kingpin.
You don't see it?
I see it.
But yeah, this actually happened. And like I said, the fact that Tarantula was a character created by Devin Grayson and Devin made it a very strong point that the long running Barbara Gordon Dick Grayson relationship ended in her run. So yeah, here's an idea. Here's a good example of fan fiction right there.
So she's basically like Liefeld, just kind of borrow similar concepts from other comics and make it your own.
That was some kind of Christian Weston Chandler shit there.
Now, y'all don't know me by now. But anyway.
True and original.
Do not steal. But this actually happened, and how could I forget Devin Grayson when talking about this kind of topic? How could I? But, what?
Said at least she's living the dream.
If you don't call it that.
Every fan fiction writer's dream.
Slash. But, going back to the principles of writing, especially when you're writing something with a continuity in it, even something as thin as a comic continuity, you gotta, respect the person who you just came behind. You know what I mean?
No, I get that.
I mean, Neil.
It's
Neil. What words of writing wisdom can you add to this?
Just that, if you're gonna, you should look at your inspirations as a foundation. I guess Not as like a source for ideas. You want to build upon a foundation. You don't want to copy, I guess, right. I would say.
Right. Because the thing is this: let's say I want to write Spider-Man, mm-hmm. and I want to have Peter Parker and Mary Jane married again. Okay.
Well, you better hide Joe Quesada's body really good.
Well, the quesadilla cannot be found, but the point remains is let's say I do that. Now, okay, we all hate One More Day, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it happened. It happened. It's there. It's stuck. What do I do? I have to write what's there. I'm going to just get them married again.
What you do is you take a little book and you write down Peter Parker's faults. And you make Skittle Spider-Man.
They already did that. They were called the Slingers.
Oh wow! I forgot about that.
I actually like that series.
Well, no, I liked
I mean,
it too.
I mean, back back when it was just Peter Parker in those costumes.
Yeah.
There was like the $1 million bounty on his head.
Yeah. So I would do something that pays respect to what's happening then and there and figure out how to get to the end result that makes sense with the world as it is versus start the next issue with, oh, yeah, wasn't that a funny dream about Mephisto?
I'd go, I'm Dr. Fucking Strange, and it's kind of my job to take care of shit like this, so I'm going to snap my fucking fingers and rewrite all reality.
As fun as that would be, Dr. Strange says, hand me my amulet, the one that says bad motherfucker on it.
Yeah, I would just go to like the head writer or whoever at Marvel and say, like, look, I want to do a mini series of Spider-Man, but I want Mary Jane back. Can I just do that? It won't count as like continuity with anything else. I just want to do this.
I mean, and that's perfectly fine. That'd probably be a bestseller.
Yeah, because that's kind of what wasn't that was it the Return of the Dark Knight or whatever the hell that was?
Dark Knight Returns?
Yeah, Dark Knight Returns. Wasn't that kind of what that was?
Yeah, now the continuity book, yeah.
Yeah. See, those are fine.
Yeah.
Well, so did Batman Son of the Demon used to be out of continuity.
Used to be.
Well, it was, for years, it was considered to be out of continuity. It was considered to be an Elseworlds tale.
It had the Elseworlds printed on the cover, dude.
Yeah, but it's not anymore.
It's like the guy who wrote the Zelda timeline looked at it and said, let me see what I could do with this.
Yeah, but the reason I say it's not in Elseworlds anymore is because that they have said, I've read interviews with I forget who created Damian Wayne, but he said that's what happened. You know, that's the Night of Passion that brought forth the Son of the Batman.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's stuff like that. It's just in a weird kind of way of just writers stuff.
They should have made a sequel to Night of the Demon called Day of the Coat Hanger.
Oh.
That's not even, that doesn't deserve a wah-wah. No.
Well, if I could play the prices right, loser.
I was just thinking of that.
But you get my point.
No, I get it. It's just,
and I think Neil has a very good solution to these writers that write with an agenda is just write out of continuity, you know, trades.
Because, you know, that would be nice for some of us who, like, don't really care about the larger continuity. Just to have, like, these nice little mini stories where you can just kind of jump in and you don't really have to care about what happened, like, 500 issues earlier.
And you can get some art by Frank Cho.
Yeah.
But that should be the solution, then. If you want to write with an agenda, get a damn mini. But, well, on that note, I think we can wrap up here. So, this was our topic about writers with an agenda, you know, fan writers writing fan fiction, how to avoid it. This is your host, Ben.
And JT from Saskatoon.
And I'm TV's Mr. Neil of DeCN.com.
And we're saying goodnight.
So long.
Bye.